One of the great joys about life is that everyone's portrait of success is different, and the manner in which they arrive at prosperity varies depending upon their gifts, their talents, and the objective they've put forth for their life. For Lois Letts Ford, her story is one of overcoming the odds. It provides people with a sense of inspiration, hope, and motivation when they're facing complicated and difficult situations. She recognized her learning difference at the age of 39 when she was teaching her second son how to read. Through determination and grit, she lives today to see the fruits of her labor. And she's here today to share the importance of following your instincts and how it can help lead you and how it helped lead Letts Ford to a sense of prosperity and grace. She says that finding success is all about developing the right mindset and living in the moment. She joined me this week to share her story of perseverance, joy, and how she's helping make a difference in her own impactful manner. I'm excited to have this conversation all about hope, inspiration, and inclusion for all. So, without further delay, I'm Kevin McShann. Let's have this conversation. Absolutely. Well, Lois, I'm delighted to be with you this afternoon to learn all about your inspiring, encouraging, and courageous story. Great to be with you this afternoon, and thank you so very much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I hope we edit out bits and pieces.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Lois, I'm wondering if we could start our conversation by you simply sharing your outstanding and encouraging story with me and how you got to where you are today.
I'd love to share my story with you because my son's story happened by a series of accidents. None of it happened by design. And when we're dealing with something as important as education, we cannot have learning happen by who you happen to meet along the way. And all too often, that's the case. So my son failed first grade in 1994. I sent him to school knowing he had a few problems. I didn't realize the depth of his problems. But on day six, I talked to his classroom teacher and I just asked, well, how's my little one going? And she threw up her hands and said, well, you know, he's so far behind. I don't know how I'm going to teach him. Every day that year, he wet his pants, he bit his fingernails, and he stared into space. And what I didn't know was the teacher shouted at him. At the end of the year, we have testing. Standardized testing to decide whether he can receive special education services. The testing revealed that he could read 10 words after 1 year in school. He had no strengths and he had a low IQ. When you have results like that at the end of first grade, the chances of getting out of that hole are very few and far between. And what happened next was that my husband, he is a professor. And he has study leave in the UK the following year, 1995. And our family all go to Oxford, England for 6 months. I go prepared to teach Nicholas at home, and I take this series of books called Success for All with me. I work with them. They've got single words, words on the page, and he's to read these words, create a picture, and say them. You get start at the top of the page, you get to the bottom after a long time. You go back to the first word, and he's got no clue. No clue what he's read. And my mother-in-law was with me, and she said, Lois, put away what is not working and make learning fun. I needed to hear those words to create a change. And then I started to think, instead of going what he can't do, what can he do? And I thought, he can rhyme words and he can see patterns. And with that, I wrote very simple poetry. And the first poem was transformative, because instead of my son being panicked, he relaxed. I read the poem to him. We laughed over it. We found the rhyming words. We said it again and again and again. We worked out what it said. And then he illustrated the poem with my mother-in-law. One poem led to another and another and another. And every day he was learning until the double O's come up. And I did double O's as in the words look, cook and book. And, you know, you're a Canadian, you know, about Captain James Cook, the last of the great explorers. And he was one of the ones who did the Northwest Passage. And he mapped the last continent of Australia. And so I wrote this simple poem. And as we're saying this again and again and again, Nicholas said to me, who came before Captain Cook? And I said, well, that would be Christopher Columbus. And he said to me, and who came before Columbus? Now, I'm floored because I haven't even thought about who or what came before Columbus. But it also said to me, this child doesn't have a low IQ. We returned to Australia. I talked to the lady who'd done the testing 12 months prior, and I said to her, he's asked these amazing questions and he's done all this work. She stood in front of me and said, well, I've spoken to the reading teacher and he's gone backwards. And in fact, he's the worst child I've seen in 20 years of teaching. That's the start of my book. That was the day that I said, you can call him whatever you like, but don't expect him to learn like everybody else. And I went around changing the teaching method. I taught my son to read. I went back to the textbooks and I became a reading specialist myself and took on children who'd failed all reading programs. That's what I did, and that's what I've done ever since. And that was the foundation of my son learning to read and write and become an effective reader and writer.
Yeah, 25. Thanks so much for sharing that with me. And I know that when you were 39, another significant event happened. So I'm wondering if you can share that with me.
In 2018. Yes. Well, there's a little step. He graduated in the top 20% of his high school class in 2007 and won the Yes, I Can Award for Exceptional Children, 2007. December 2012, after 5.5 years of undergraduate degree, he's got an honours degree in mathematics and an honours degree in engineering. He is on a flight to London because he has a scholarship to do a PhD in the Department of Applied Mathematics at Oxford University. And in 2018, he graduated with his PhD in applied mathematics from Oxford. That's what you're talking about.
Well, you must be thrilled about that, right?
I am. It's a double-edged sword. I am thrilled that my son succeeded. I am really disappointed that it took so much effort on our part and so many extraordinary circumstances to teach a child who has got this phenomenal brain. Children who don't have that privilege don't succeed, and that's disastrous. So yes, I'm proud of my son, but I'm also very disappointed with the way we treat the vast majority of children who struggle.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm curious to also ask you about your thoughts on how we can improve the education system as well.
You know, number one is we have to get more stories out like my son, because so much of our teaching comes down to what we think, what's in between our ears, and what we think about that child sitting in front of us. The diagnostician said, he has gone backwards. Your child is dumb. She didn't say those words, but she thought them. The fact that those thoughts went through her mind showed she had no clue that my son was capable of learning to read and write. And that it comes back to mindset. What do we think about the child sitting in front of us? That's number one. Second, we go on and on and on about structured literacy as if it's the only thing to do. We have to evaluate daily as teachers and reading specialists. Is what I'm doing working for every child in my class? And if it's not, I mean, if it is, we say, yes, that's fantastic. If it's not, what are we going to do? Are we going to try and teach them, or are we just going to say, well, they just can't do it? So much, as I said, comes down to what's between our ears and how we perceive the child sitting in front of us. If we perceive them as dumb, that's the way we teach them. If we perceive them as future rocket scientists, we change the outcome.
Yeah, I asked you how would you like to see teachers sort of change the perception of how they approach teaching children?
Teachers have to be more reflective. More reflective, they need smaller groups. Teachers need smaller groups. You can't decide to change the whole teaching for 30 children and only teach one. You've got to teach the whole class. So classroom teachers have got one job to do. Reading teachers have got another. There's an incident in my book that happened at the end of first grade, and it was the whole class activity of turning a book into a play. Turning that book into a play included every child in the classroom, including my son. And what he did is he came home and retold the whole story, which is something he had never done before. So changing the way we teach to have it more multisensory, to have it more inclusive, to engage every child in the classroom, not just do worksheets, is number one. A number one change that every teacher can make.
Yeah, absolutely. And Laura, tell me about your first book and documenting your son's story and why you thought it was important to write it.
Story or my son's story is extraordinary because we lived in Australia. Australia was our home. We had 6 months in the UK in 1995 where I taught him to start reading. And in 1999, we moved to Lubbock, Texas. My son's growth and success actually depended on each of those moves. You don't expect it, but each international move made a huge difference to his life. And without that move, he wouldn't be where he is today. And in Lubbock, partly because of where we are, where we were, you know, Lubbock, if you don't know Lubbock, check it out on a map. It is flat, it is brown, it is boring, and in the middle of nowhere. And there were circumstances circumstances that occurred in Lubbock that didn't occur or would not have occurred in many other places in the world. And again, those two moves changed his life and really gave me an insight into how much work we have to put into children who struggle.
Yeah, absolutely. And Lois, I'm curious to get your perception on the concept of perseverance and inclusion for all children in education. What does that look like for you?
Perseverance for all children. Before we can ask children to persevere, we have to believe in them. We have to show them that they are teachable, that they are worthy of our teaching, and that they are accepted in our classroom. Then they can persevere. It's very difficult to persevere when every single day, you, like my son in grade one, you are failing and failing and failing. You can't do it. But there has to be a change somewhere so that the children can know that they are worthy and can succeed. So what are we showing those children who are struggling in the classroom? Are we alienating them or are we including them?
Yeah, absolutely. And you talk about including children in the classroom in all aspects. And I know that's important to you. And I'm going to share something with you, Lois. You know, next month is National Disability Employment Awareness Month. And one of my passions in life is helping high school students and college students with disabilities find and locate employment. So tell me about the importance from your view and perspective of someone raising a child with a disability. Tell me about your perception and opinion about how important it is that you include them in the workforce as well.
That's a fascinating question. Because my son, with his PhD, still has a learning disability or still has a disability. The amount of work he has to do to prepare for an interview is extraordinary. So he works 10 times harder than the normal person just to do an interview. Yes, we do need to include them. How do we do this? I don't know. I wish I had answers for you. But I know it's challenging from the point of view from the person who's doing the interview and doing the job and then getting work that allows them to be employed continuously.
And what sort of resources would you like the education system to have to better prepare folks with or students with disabilities to enter the world of not only work, but society as well?
That's a tough question. What resources? There has to be more understanding and more knowledge of the people with learning disabilities and what they bring to the table. These days of metrics, you know, every time you get off the phone, they ask, will you give us a score? Will you give us a review on these few things? The metrics are very narrow, aren't they? We want it to be wider. We need to have people in power with knowledge of the wider workforce, not just these narrow metrics. Were you kind to me today or whatever? You know, the simple things they ask. There needs to be a widening of all sorts of areas in the work environment. You know, my son has these enormous strengths and enormous weaknesses, yet we only want the middle. And I don't have answers as to how we do all of this, but he certainly could answer more of those questions, as could his wife.
Well, yeah, when you go through it, you have an authentic perspective, don't you?
Yes. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. You know, and my son certainly has had his struggles with employment. You know, getting employment, one, doing the interview is huge, and secondly, finding jobs that match his skill set has not been easy.
Yeah, and Lois, tell me, what does that mean to you when I say going beyond the label? What do you think going beyond the label means to you as an educator and as a parent of a special needs child?
I have a quote in my book from Martina Navratilova, and it says something like, labels are for files, labels are for clothing, labels are not for children. Labels can be double-edged. They allow you access to the services. They also put you in a pot that possibly says, this child will never succeed. That is disastrous. To not see beyond the label, to see the child as someone who just can't do it, doesn't help anyone. It doesn't help the child. It doesn't help the teacher. So, we have so much work to do on getting beyond labels and seeing children as potential. My son, Nicholas, has this enormous language deficit. And when you meet him, even today, if you don't know him well, he looks slow. He's slower with his speech and slower with his language, going from the brain to the mouth. And you just think, well, you know, he can't do very much, can he? You don't know he has a PhD in applied mathematics. You don't know what he's capable of because the initial presentation is he doesn't think very fast. And we as human beings judge other people so quickly about what they can do and what they can't do, rather than taking a step back and getting to know them and seeing more value in them. And that's why I want stories to come out, because when we hear stories like the story of Helen Keller, that we know a child who is deaf and blind can read and write, we have potential there and we need to know it. Like, just like my son, Nicholas. Yes, he is slow with language. He's got a mathematic brain that is better than the vast majority of people on this earth, the 99% of people on this earth. What do we see? Who are we going to accept?
Yeah, absolutely. And Lois, tell me, how are you currently working to pay it forward? I know that you've worked with children with learning disabilities and reading challenges before, and I know that you're still active in that work. So tell me what you're currently up to.
I tutor privately. I actually don't take many students, and that's deliberate. I take the students who have failed reading programs. They've been in school and they've not been successful. I teach them. And then when I'm working with them, I customize the reading program to meet the needs of the child, which means I do my 1 hour with the child and do another 2 hours preparing. So, not always, but I do work outside of my paid time to make sure that I am engaging that child, because number one about reading instruction is not about decoding or about teaching structured literacy. It's actually about, have I engaged you in what I am doing? And if I haven't engaged you and I haven't got your attention, that child will not learn to read. So I personalize the instruction. That's one. The second thing I do is I make sure the child has all of the skills they need to be able to build decoding up. And what I mean by that is that we know we send children to school at age 6 and 7. By that age, we expect them to have a set series of skills so that they can learn to decode easily. My students often come with a deficit in that area. And one of the first things I do with my students is ask someone to write the word TO on a piece of paper. And I say to them, give me a sentence with that word. My students will say to me, I have two hands. If a student is saying, giving me a concrete meaning for the word TO, they will not learn to read. It's that simple. And then once we've got those in, then we can do the decoding. And I also do the whole of the language and the parts. Engage the child in a love of learning as well as a love of teaching reading.
Yeah, absolutely. And Lois, I'm fascinated to ask you your message to other parents who are going through the same story or a similar story as you and raising a child with a learning disability. Tell me what you would tell them as they embark on this journey.
Number one, believe in your child. Believe they are capable of learning. That's the first. We must believe them. And our children are so young. They're at the very beginning of their lives. We want to give them the best start possible. So believe in them. Secondly, one of the things you can do is take a book that they are reading or trying to read and turn it into a play so that every word becomes meaningful, every action becomes meaningful, so that they can connect the written word, the word on paper, and the words that are coming out of their mouth. That's easier said than done, but that's certainly one of the things that I can do as well. The third thing is to recognize that words have multiple meaning. And children often get caught, just like I said, with TO and TWO. They don't understand the difference between TO and TWO. And there are so many words right at the beginning of teaching that children do not understand. So we have to show them, this is what comes out of our mouth. This is what happens when we put it on paper. This is what we have to do. And then personalize it. Have them touch and do things around the house. And I put sticky labels around the house. You know, there are two apples on the table. There are two oranges on the table. There are two lemons on the table. Identifying the TWO. And then we'll go, I go to the kitchen to get a drink of water. I go to the bathroom to wash my hands. I go to school. And then I'm showing my students the difference between TO and TWO. That's how I would do it. And they're the things I start with.
Yeah, absolutely. And tell me, when you think of your personal and professional legacy, how do you want that to be defined?
That Lois will try anything to teach every child. She will work very hard to work with children to make sure they learn to read. That's what I think I'd like them to say. She'll put the effort in to say, yes, your child can learn to read.
Absolutely. And Lois, tell me, if people want to get connected with you, well, what's the best way they can get connected with the work that you do? Yeah.
There's my website, which is www.loisletchford.com. I'm available on LinkedIn. LinkedIn's very easy to connect with me. I'm on Twitter. Facebook, I've lost track of. I don't know how Facebook works anymore. What else have we got? And Instagram, and I'm on Instagram. So you'll find me at any of those places. And just Google my name, Lois Letchford, and I have a phenomenal book trailer about my son's journey that's worth checking out. And I'm on YouTube. I'm on YouTube.
Fabulous. Well, as someone who has lived with physical disability all of his life. I want to thank you for trusting me with your son and your personal story. I truly enjoyed our conversation about learning, education, and inclusion. Your work in the space in Tao on my behalf is most appreciated, and I want to thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Kevin. I am delighted to be here and have this conversation with you. Thank you very much.